Dear listeners, Sairam from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And yes, it is happening in Prashantinilam in this month of April. Well, April is one of those months which climatically is not so good. The temperatures are soaring. And even though you don't feel comfortable in this month of April in Prashantinilam in terms of the climate, but what is more painful whenever April arrives is perhaps the memories of April. Because we don't know why, but Swami chose this month to withdraw from his beautiful form into the aspect of being formless. And every time April comes, those memories flood your mind. And the kind of emotions that these memories evoke are so varied. Initially, it was so much full of sorrow that we just only wanted to lock yourself up in a room and do nothing. But how long can you do that? And slowly you begin to reconcile. And then you feel, no, there is something more that the Lord wants me to do. That's why He has left me here. That's why He has filled me with so much love. That's why He has made me what I am today. And that is when you want to step out. And that is when you want to now really go into what He said. When He said that I am in you, with you, around you, below you, above you. And you feel His 86 years of pure love can never go in vain. And that is when you begin to really now think deeply about this. And you begin to feel. And once you open your heart, that is when you allow Him and His love to flow through you. And Bhagwan too has been doing in such amazing manner this opening of our hearts. This morning I was talking to a devotee who came to Prashantinilam after many years. And she said, as she prostrated at Bhagwan's sannidhi, she very clearly heard this strong message from within, where Bhagwan said, why are you coming so late to me? She always wanted to come for Bhagwan's darshan and she, for some reason, could not make it. And this morning, this is the message Bhagwan gave her. I know of so many professionals, so many doctors who did not want to come to Prashantinilam after Bhagwan left his physical mortal coil. But Bhagwan, in different ways, sometimes even forcefully telling them, why are you not coming now? This is the time you should come. I am waiting for you. You have work to do. And that is the reason why Prashanti is what is Prashanti today. And that is also the reason, you know, April is very, very special. And the month of April always, as I told you, brings back all these poignant memories. And when you come to think of it, the beautiful Sri Sathya Sai Super Speciality Hospital that Bhagwan unfurled for all the people who had nowhere to go, He chose Himself to be in that hospital in this month of April. He did not want to go anywhere else. And just imagine, the divine body rested in this hospital for almost 2 weeks, more than 2 weeks, nearly a month. No wonder every doctor who comes to the super speciality hospital always maintains that we don't know why, but there is something in this hospital because of which the patients recover fast. There is such abysmal low rates of infection. And this is something that I've heard from every doctor whom I have interviewed in the last almost 7-8 years, every doctor who's come for the first time would always say this, there is something about this place. And that is the reason why we see something else in the patient's faces here. When the hospital was about to be inaugurated, Colonel Jagarao was worried. And Bhagwan used to often recount how everyone thought that this is just not possible, this cannot happen. And Bhagwan, whenever he narrated this, he always ended saying, whenever there is a pure intention, my intention was absolutely selfless. And in this country, any selfless act will always find fulfillment. And Bhagwan used to give so many amazing directions to the doctors. He almost redefined what is the profession of a doctor. I remember the cardiac conference that was held in 1993 when the who's who of cardiology and cardiac surgery were in Prashanthi Nilayam. And Bhagwan on that occasion took the opportunity to tell all the doctors that doctors today treat the disease and not the patient. And Bhagwan talked about the glory of the human body. Swami said the human body is a thing of marvelous beauty. Men cannot easily comprehend the secret of God's creation. No one can explain how the eyes have acquired the power of seeing this phenomenal world. The beauty of all the organs in the human body is a secret of creation. And there are such amazing tenets. Bhagwan talked about sacrifice and said, when you approach the patient in a spirit of sacrifice, the patient's feelings get purified. And Bhagwan talked about the relationship between mind and prana. Swami said, what are the causes of the heart, diseases of the heart? Swami said, all diseases are a reflection of pravritti, the disposition of the mind. And he went on to explain how food and mind are so related. And then Bhagwan said, doctors today are primarily concerned with the gross physical body. They pay little attention to the subtle form of the mental makeup. Most of the diseases that are prevalent in the world today are related to the mind. And I remember, this is something Bhagwan used to mention in the discourses right from the time I was a student. I've heard this statement when Bhagwan used to say 99% of the diseases are born in the mind, and I used to always wonder, how is this possible? How to understand this? And definitely there is so much more for us to dwell on this. At that point in time, I just dismissed it. But today, when you see what modern science is saying, if you see some of the research that is going on in the frontiers of modern science, you know that they are all also inching towards this. And I thought this is something very, very important for us to dwell on. Because all of us want a healthy body. Unless we have a healthy body, how can we do God's work? How can we even discharge our responsibilities? And when Bhagwan has given as tenets how to keep our body healthy, let us dwell on what Bhagwan has said. And today what I wish to do is to understand these things from the insight that Bhagwan has given to one of his doctors, Dr. Ravi Shankar Polishetty. Dr. Ravi Shankar Polishetty worked in Bhagwan's hospital many years ago, and then Bhagwan guided him to study Ayurveda. He's a practicing cardiac surgeon, a very distinguished one, but also has made understanding these principles of health in the light of what Swami has said, his life's passion. And today, in this last segment of Thursday Life, this is what we are going to dwell. We are going to discuss about the connection between our body, our mind, and and how all this correlates to good health. A good health that would be a fit offering to the Lord. A good health at the end of which we can stand at the gates of heaven and tell the Lord, Lord, whatever talent you had given me, every little bit, I have tried my best, maintained it, and have done my best to offer it to you in the best possible manner. For us, for that, we have to first know how to maintain ourselves so that we can ensure that we become an offering to the Lord. So this is what we are going to discuss tonight in this last hour of Thursday Life, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and as discussed, today we are going to dwell on the relationship between body, mind and good health, and we are going to have a live conversation with Dr. Ravi Shankar Polishetty. Just to give you a brief background of who is Dr. Ravi Shankar, he is a cardiovascular surgeon by profession, trained from Bakula Scientific Center for Cardiovascular Surgery, and he currently is based in Toronto with offices in US and India. He is also the honorary head of departments of cardiology and immunology at Research Institute of Immunopathology, Moscow Medical Academy, Russian Academy of Natural Sciences. He is also a research consultant for the intellectual property John Hopkins University, Baltimore, USA. He had earlier worked as a clinical trial coordinator for Arbor Surgicals, LLC, Irvine, California, and successfully performed clinical trials of a new aortic valve designed by this company and was instrumental in its successful phase one trial, after which the company was acquired by Medtronic. He is a member of the Heart Failure Society of America, European Association of Cardiothoracic Surgeons, European Society of Cardiovascular Surgeons, Association of Russian Cardiovascular Surgeons, Russian Avia Cosmic Medicine, member of Pediatric Cardiac Society, and so on. It is a long CV. I'll not go into everything, but I think that gives you an idea of his accomplishments in as a surgeon. And as I mentioned to you, Bhagwan guided him to move into Ayurveda. So from 2002, he has been the world's first to create models of Ayurvedic doshas and performed electrophysiological studies and established for the first time in the world a correlation between the Ayurvedic doshas and their electrophysiological reactivity. He further continued with his work from 2002 and realized and demonstrated that this work is very instrumental in not only correlating Ayurveda with the modern medicine, but also helps in arriving at an integrated understanding of the modern medicine. And of course, now he has his manufacturing unit in Hyderabad, which produces the formulations that he has created, and he's been able, by Bhagwan's grace, to find cures for seemingly incurable diseases. He's the founder of the company Sai Ganga Panacea Private Limited. So there's much more to him, and I think all that will come out as we begin this conversation. I don't want to take away more time because he's just here in Puttaparthi for a couple of days, and I would like that we make most use of that opportunity. And just joining me in this conversation are also two other former students, my colleagues, Mr. Hari Shankar, who is perhaps not new to Radio Sai listeners. Brother Hari Shankar works in the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. He has done his engineering in IIT Chennai, and after that Bhagwan gave him the chance to do his management in Bhagwan's university here, and after that he's been working in the accounts department of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, and he's someone who's been very involved in the healthcare part mission of the Central Trust. And we also have Brother Jay Ganesh, again someone who has had long association with Bhagwan, having done his graduation and double post-graduation, MSc and MBA in Bhagwan's university, and he's someone who has been instrumental in spearheading the telemedicine project of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. So we have both of them, Hari Shankar and Brother Jai Ganesh, and of course, Dr. Ravi Shankar. So welcome, a warm welcome to all of you to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Ravi Shankar, if you can share what you think about what Bhagwan mentioned about this relationship between mind and body. You know, I was referring to the conversation, the discourse that Bhagwan gave during the cardiac conference, and where Bhagwan very clearly says that most of the diseases, Swami says, mental illnesses seem to outnumber physical ailments, and most of the diseases that are prevalent in the world today are related to the mind. How do we understand this?
Thank you very much, Sairam listeners. Thank you very much, Bishu. Thanks, everybody here. I'll approach this answer in two perspectives: spiritual or Vedantic perspective and the scientific perspective. Of course, whatever Swami says is the truth. Finished. He cannot say anything other than the truth. So with that faith, with that belief, I ventured into all that Swami said. I tried to apply that in experimental models, and then by Swami's guidance, I came up with interesting discoveries, interesting data. I'll share something which is very, very relevant here. Spiritually, in the Vedantic perspective, how is this human body created? It's very interesting, isn't it?
Hmm.
I'll try to explain that. The Vedantic aspects, it's actually science, actually. It's a metaphysical science that leads to the creation of the human body, because this is very important. And end this, you'll realize how important this is and how, relevant what Swami says is in this respect. What happens is, every human being, just before born, he has two bodies, essentially. The Sukshma Sharira and the Karana Sharira. Because the Stula Sharira is the one that is created during the, embryogenesis. And in the Sukshma Sharira, an important aspect of the mind. The mind has four aspects, as we know. The Mano, Buddhi, Chitta and Ahankara. The Chitta is a very important aspect of the mind, which stores all the impressions of all the past lives. Mm. All the impressions. Okay, and the Chitta is the one that defines the personality of a person, the character of a person. The Chitta gives rise to the aspect Buddhi. The Buddhi, what Buddhi does is definition. Nirnayatmakam Buddhi is what is said in Viveka Chudamani. And the Buddhi then gives rise to the aspect of mind. The mind actually creates the five sense organs, the five senses, and the five vayus. The pancha five vayus, the prana, pana, vyana, dan, samana. The five senses we all know, the shabda, sparsha, rupa, rasa, gandham. And the five sense organs, the karmi, the jnanendriyas. How does it create? This is very important. The mind creates these 3 into 5 aspects of the sukshma sharira by, one for experiencing the external world. Because ma naha is, if you translate that from Sanskrit, what it says is it says no and it says don't. Ma and na. Ma is no, and na is don't. It says no to what? Sa. Sa is rasovesaha, for God. So it explores it doesn't go inward, it goes outward. That's its function.
That's the nature of the mind.
That's the nature of the mind. It goes outward, that's all. So for it to go outward into the external environment, it creates these five senses, the shabda, sparsha, rupa, rasa, gandha, the five sense organs, all the five sense organs, we know that, the five vayus, with which it actually sustains its own self. The five vayus are very important. The prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana vayus.
Wow. So everything is actually the creation of the mind.
Exactly. That's what I'm coming. And how
Swami should say, mano mulam idam jagat.
Exactly. Manayeva jagat sarvam, manayeva jagat trayam. Because it's the mind. Okay, we'll come to that later. Manayeva jagat sarvam is because the mind is creating these five into three organs. And how does it create? Where does it get the information as to how to create this? It gets its information from the chitta. The chitta is the repository of all the impressions of all the past. So that, from the chitta, it's a jivi, he only plans, under the guidance of the supreme God, the jivi plans his life. And how he plans? He plans to clear up a part of his karma in the form of prarabdha. Prarabdha is a karma, that you can clear up in one's own life. So he plans to clear up that karma by using, with the help of the mind, and the mind uses this information from which is a some vector of all the actions of all the past lives, and that's how a specific individual has specific predispositions of his five senses, five sense organs, and five vayus, and the mind. Another interesting thing is uses the Panchamahabhutas. The Panchamahabhutas that are already pure. I mean, they came from, I don't want to go into the entire Sankhya philosophy, but then the Panchamahabhutas that are available. And in these Panchamahabhutas, they combine in different proportions to form Vata, Pitta, Kapha. Vata is a combination of Vayu and Akasha. Pitta is Agni. And Kapha is Prithvi and Apaha.
These are the tenets of Ayurveda.
These are the tenets of Ayurveda. This is from the Sankhya philosophy. Because Sankhya philosophy forms the basis for Ayurveda. For literally any physical, chemical science, this is the basis actually. So, the Vata, the Pitta and Kapha, these are not the physical Panchamahabhutas. No, we're talking about the subtle Panchamahabhutas. So the mind uses these subtle Vata, Pitta, Kapha energies to form the physical body.
Okay.
Okay, and how are they formed again? It uses again the impressions of all the previous lives from the chitta and creates its own body. So that's why the physical body and another 15
aspects. So the mind uses the help of the elements, five elements.
Exactly.
And uses the knowledge from the chitta.
Yes.
And creates the body.
Exactly.
To carry out the prarabdha.
Exactly. So that's how every person has a certain predisposition. He comes because if you look back again to the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, chapter 1, third shloka, it means yogas, chitta vritti nirodhaka. Why did he say so? It's very important. He says, what is yoga? Yoga is connection to God. It's an internet connection to the eternity. How do you attain that? He says, the moment you remove aspects, the vrittis of the chitta, you become one with God. And to do that, you have to either translate the vrittis into actions that nullify all the previous impressions, or what we do in Ayurveda is we balance Vata, Pitta, Kapha, because the imbalance is caused by the impressions of the past. The impressions of the past use up the Panchamahabhutas in a way to create the physical body, and that causes the impressions of the past actually create the imbalances of Vata, Pitta, Kapha.
Okay.
So that's why we are like, if you are born as a human being, you have some imbalances. Only God, Swami, cannot have imbalances. That's why Swami, according to Ayurveda, health is balancing of Vata, Pitta and Kapha. The moment you do this, you don't have to do anything. That's why, nowadays it becomes so irrelevant for me to even look at the medical reports, because it don't make any sense actually. Very frankly, it don't make any sense. What I do is I do the pulse diagnosis, understand the proportions of Vata, Pitta, Kapha in each of the tissues, and try to arrive at a methodology wherein I can restore the balance. And once you do that, the body itself heals. The body itself heals. So, Vata, Pitta, Kapha lie in the interface. On one side you have the chittam, on the other side you have the 20 aspects of the physical and the sukshma, the sthula and the sukshma sharira. The five senses, the five sense organs, the five vayus and the five karmendriyas are created by the mind using the information, the repository from the chitta, and applying using the reactants. If you understand this as a chemical reaction, the reactants are the Panchamahabhutas themselves. The moment you arrive at a balance of Vata, Pitta, Kaphas, you remove, by the principle of negative feedback, it removes the aspects, the vrittis of the chitta, erases them. And it also brings about a balance, a balanced behavior of all the five senses, five sense organs, five karmendriyas and the five vayus. That's how health is restored in Ayurveda. There's a Vedantico-scientific aspect of, of health. Mm-hmm. Now coming to, the modern understanding, something called, because being a cardiac surgeon, we had been continuously monitoring a certain parameter, which is called as the heart rate variability. The heart rate variability is because the heart is not just a muscle actually. It's a muscle. It also has a neurovascular bundle. It's got neurons. It's got its own conductive system. So the heart has all the three important structures, the nerves, the muscle tissue, and the blood vascular system. And interestingly, if you just observe yourself, check your heart rate, pulse rate. When you breathe in, the heart rate goes low. When you breathe out, the heart rate goes high. This is called as heart rate variability. Breathing in increases the impact of the parasympathetic nervous system, yes. And breathing out increases the activity of the sympathetic nervous system. So that's
how. So if you can explain that in layman terms.
Oh, okay. One second. But this is layman actually. Anyway, I'll try. So the thing is, parasympathetic nervous system and sympathetic nervous system are important aspects of the mind itself. Of the mind, and the mind, the platform of the mind, the physical platform of the mind is the brain. Okay, mind translates again the information from the chitta onto the brain. The brain then appropriately responds. And the important functions, important aspect again of the brain is two aspects are the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. These are two important, these are two regulatory, neuro-regulatory systems that literally regulate every aspect of the human functioning. And the heart actually translates this information into its own heart rate. So your heart rate continuously changes. I'm not talking about the average heart rate. What we do, what we miss out when we do a conventional pulse rate reading or in a heart rate reading isn't what we do, we take a strip of 1 minute and then count the number of beats. No, that's just the heart rate per minute. But what is important, and every beat has its own cycle, has its own time cycle. Every beat varies between 750 milliseconds to 1000 milliseconds. And that is the culmination of all the processes that are happening in the muscle tissue, in the brain tissue, especially in the muscle, in the brain tissue. Brain again is a physical platform for the mind. So, the mind essentially translates all the information, as we said again, it translates into neurophysiological processes in the body. And the heart rate is a special indicator of that. That's where I use. Nowadays, by managing heart rate. So what is yoga again? So when we say, what do we do in yoga, in pranayama, for example, not the entire yoga, but when we do pranayama, we are trying to regulate the mind's activity by regulating the prana. The five vayus that were created originally. You remember I said,
yes.
The five vayus are created again by the mind.
Mind.
With the information. So what we're doing is, what we have understood scientifically now, is there a clear-cut correlation between the rate of breathing and the mental activity.
Okay.
Does this tie in with, nowadays they talk about stimulation of the vagus nerve?
Yes, true. Stimulation. You can do baroreceptor stimulation here, carotid stimulation.
Right.
These are all, they do definitely correlate.
Right.
So our rishis, our scientists have interestingly decoded the entire, vayu vectorology and its impact on the mind. That's what Swami is speaking. When Swami says this, this is what I understand.
Wow.
This is so beautiful. It's so profound. Of course, our discussion, I want to leave time for other speakers also. So I try to bring in both the spiritual Vedantic aspects and the scientific aspects. How important is the mind in arriving at, disease-free state of a human being? And we use, in today's scientific, in many of the alternate centers especially, they have understood, in most of the, especially in Johns Hopkins, we have a special division which is actually entirely uses the heart rate variability as an index for health or non-health, as a person to, being in a healthy state or a non-healthy state.
Just for the benefit of listeners,
sure.
So many may not know exactly what these terms mean. So when you say vata, pitta and kapha, so we know these are humors that activate in the body, but exactly what do they correspond to?
That's a very, very interesting but a very lengthy answer that I would arrive at, because it's not as simple as that. Because, see, as we said, the vata, pitta, kapha are combinations of, these pancha mahabhutas in various proportions. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what I try to do, because there's no straightforward answer for this, what I try to do is try to create models of vata, pitta, kapha in animals Because that's how you study a new concept. If you want to understand something, you just create that model in animals and try to analyze. That's what I did in
so because if you when you go for a very simplistic reading of what Ayurveda is, it just says like wind, bile and phlegm.
That's not a problem. You know what? I came up with a new nomenclature. Because that won't explain everything.
Right.
Wind. What would wind? You know, that's not the right translation. Yeah. Understanding Sanskrit, I would actually translate vata as a propelling agent.
I see.
Pitta as an agent of transformation.
Uh-huh.
And kapha as a cementing agent. This would be appropriate translations, you know, when you say, because that would actually convey the whole meaning. I mean, at least, if not whole, you know, a partially whole meaning of these agents.
Progression, transformation and cementing.
Cementing, yeah. So, the kapha, that's why, what it does is, it's...
Can I give you an example?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. The propelling agent of the vata is actually responsible for movement. Any movement in the body is because of vata. So that's why I call it as a propelling agent.
Okay.
That's why vata, when you translate, I mean, six aspects of vata, when one of the aspects of vata, according to Charaka Samhita, is chalatva. Chala means movement. Chalatva is movement.
Causes.
Yeah. So that's why, you know, vata. And then vata is again shitala. It's cold in nature. But then, you know, our rishis, they don't just straightforward, I mean, that's just one meaning. The Paniniya grammar, if you apply Paniniya grammar, then vata is a cold agent. But then what vata means when you apply Kasakrishnadi grammar is like totally different. It means, you know, I won't decode, you know, every syllable into its components. I'll just tell what it means. Vata is a biological environment, according to me, you know, having done so many experiments. Is a biological environment in which predominantly endothermic reactions take place, because according to Kasakrishnadi grammar, vata, one of the properties of one of the aspects of vata is sheetala. So sheetala, la tatra rasayana chariha is what is said in the Kasakrishnadi grammar. So la means a chemical reaction, and sheeta. And there's one more grammatical principle which means which reads as follows: sa sha yora bhedyaha. Sa and sha are equal. So in the word sheeta could sa could be replaced with sha. I mean sha could be replaced with sa, and its meaning doesn't change. So sheeta becomes sita. Sita, according to the Kasakrishnadi grammar, it means a rate limiting change.
I see.
So, you now combine both this. Sheetala means a chemical reaction which is rate limiting in its own self. I mean, we know, rate limiting chemical reactions are essentially endothermic reactions. So, vata is a biological environment in which endothermic reactions take place, making the system cold, which we already said, Paniniya grammar again, sheetala means cold, and cold also means, sheetala again means, it imbibes water molecules. So what happens is at the end of the endothermic reaction, these water molecules get bound to the system, so the system becomes dry. Another property of vata is rukshana. Rukshana means dry. So instead of saying vata, I mean, instead of talking about a biological environment in which, you know, endothermic reactions take place, which is a rate-limiting chemical reaction, in the end of which you cyclic aromatic compounds are formed, which are volatile in nature. They just escape from the system and make the system dry and cold further. And then this leads to adhesion or, you know, binding of water molecules to the system, making the system dry. They said it is vata, that's all. Stop speaking so much. So that's the beauty, you know, our rishis are very excellent.
And the beauty of Sanskrit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you mentioned how the same word through different forms of Sanskrit gives so many meanings.
Definitely.
So
yeah.
Much of data compression, actually.
Data compression, absolutely. That's what... Yeah. You go on.
I'm not sure, like, whether I'm coming back to the initial discussion about Chitta. Interestingly, that aspects of Chitta are not retained once the body is formed, right? If the person has got the intelligence of his or her previous births, then I think it will make a lot of difference.
Yeah, true. Okay, so here I said not all the information of the past. I said the impressions of the past.
Hmm.
So you go through a certain day. You know, at the end of the day, it's a good day. It was a bad day. It was a good day because of 1, 2, 3, 4. It was a bad day because of 1, 2, 3, 4. So this good and bad get encoded. These impressions get encoded. These impressions get encoded into samskaras and vasanas. The good impressions are called samskaras. The bad impressions are called the vasanas. And both form vrittis, that's all, essentially. Either samskaras or vasanas will lead to a certain mental predisposition. The mind, say for example, you know, at the end of the sixth month in the Telugu land, you know, we have an interesting, I think, you know, it's pretty much there, you know, everywhere in India. At the age of, the month of six, you know, you place, I mean, literally all kinds of articles. You place a knife, rice ball, books somewhere, and then you leave the child to pursue, I mean, to identify, I mean, to pursue any object that he wants. And then whichever objects he touches, we identify his mental predisposition by the object he touches.
Yes.
That's why Annamaya, you know, he went straight away to the Vedic scriptures. So, you know, everyone, this mental predisposition is guided by the propelling activity that is emanating from the chitta vrittis. Not, I mean, you, of course, if you are able to go deeper into each of those moments, you can definitely decode from each of the impression the every act of the past life. But that's not very important, because the soul, under the guidance of the Supreme Being, knows that's not important. Actions are not important. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna mentions, you know, bhavagrahi janardana. Your action is not actually important. It's the intent that is important. So these impressions cause that intent. And Swami clearly, no, Swami has decoded it. I don't have to decode it. Swami mentions clearly, thought leads to word, word leads to action. Repeated action becomes habit. Habit becomes a character, and character remains as a personality of a person. And this personality becomes a trait of the vritti. Trait, or it gets encoded in the form of the vritti. This vritti again causes birth. And this vritti, see, just before the birth, you know, we are very much aware that we need to go to God. And then, so what we do is we actually program our own life, actually. That's where manayeva jagat sarvam. It's not God who does this. It's the karmic, our own intellect in the form of the buddhi, nirnayatmakam buddhi. The buddhi decides, okay, this is the prarabdha that I want to, you know, face through this life. And that's how I'll go back to God. Because if you do this religiously through one life, you'll go back to God. But what happens when we come back under the influence of many external factors, dietary factors, looking at all these models, you know, across the world, you get into this illusion. We get into this illusion. And then we mess up with the prarabdha, and we again create another karma. That's why, you know, Swami gives very simple thing, a very simple recipe for that. Okay, do your karma without getting attached. So it is difficult again, doing karma without getting it. So Swami gave an interesting, you know, when we all came for the, when we started the alumni, you know, Satisai Vidya Vihar alumni, Swami gave us an interview. He said, whatever you do, just do with Swami's name. Then one of the students asked, Swami, how do I play football thinking football is you and I can kick it? I said, don't kick it then. So what Swami says is, you know, I mean, we are going again to metaphysical aspects. You know, we're not, because, you know, it's very difficult to just limit ourselves to health, actually. Because health, according to me, according to what Swami said once, you know, very interestingly on the veranda, is a state of balance of vata and pitta and kapha. That's all is health. So that once these are balanced, your indriyas, the karma indriyas, the jnana indriyas, they fall in line.
So when all these are balanced, it's not only that you'll be physically healthy.
Exactly.
But you'll also spiritually be healthy. I mean, it'll help you in your spiritual progress.
That is why Vaidyo Narayano Harihi is what is said. Why is he? I was thinking, why? I mean, I used to tell one of my friends, you know, in Satya Sai Vidya, I used to say, I want to become a CA. I said, I want to become a doctor. He said, oh, then it's a noble profession. He said, every profession is noble, I used to say. Every profession, if you do your job properly, being a CA, you give a proper accounting practice to the company, and then you try to, if you don't try to evade taxes, pay taxes properly, the government will be healthy, people will be healthy, and you're doing a noble job. But then later, as I slowly started understanding, Vaidyo Narayano Harihi makes immense sense. You know why? I'll tell you, this is a very interesting reason that I understood for myself. Because when you are able to balance in your patient, vata, pitta, kapha, in each tissue, in each cell, in each tissue, which is group of cells form tissue, and group of tissues form organs. If you balance Vata Pitta Kapha at a cellular level, tissue level, organ system level, and the body as a whole, and if this reaction happens for 12 consecutive years, that patient becomes one with God.
Oh, wow.
By the principle of negative feedback, this balance of Vata Pitta Kapha will nullify all the Chitta Vrittis, and it will make all these 5 into 4, 20 aspects of the sthula and sukshma sharira totally in perfect unison with God's energy. So he becomes a jivan mukta. So that's why vaidya, a doctor, a true doctor, okay, not the one who treats the gross physical body. That's what Swami was mentioning. If you're approaching patient with this, with an understanding of Vata Pitta Kapha and with an aim of balancing Vata Pitta Kapha at each of these levels just I mentioned, this person will become Jivan Mukta.
Dr. Ravi, you had a very unconventional progress in medical learning.
Sure.
So you started with mainstream medicine, what we know as, say, allopathic medicine. And where we have to do a number of tests in order to be able to diagnose a person's physical condition, the health condition.
Sure.
And you were just mentioning some time ago that, through the pulse, how does that work,
See, what our rishis did was, if you understand this, why I was in the beginning of our discussion, I was mentioning that the understanding of the pancha bhutas is very important, because that understanding is encoded in the form of Sankhya philosophy. Okay, Ishwari Krishna Sankhya philosophy. In all, there are just 72 shlokas, that's all. And there's another interesting book that I read was Swami Vidyaranya's Vedanta Panchadashi. These two books, without Swami Sandeha Nivarani or Prashnottaravahini, won't make any sense for us. Mm-hmm. But Swami has, simplified the understanding of the Panchamahabhutas. That led me to a clear-cut understanding of the Panchamahabhutas. Because that is very important, because the Panchamahabhutas combine in various proportions to form the Vata Pitta Kapha. And then the Vata Pitta Kapha combine again in various proportions to give rise to the 108 elements. The 105 elements as of now, which we know in the periodic classification. I think 3 elements are yet to be discovered. We should discover those things. And then they again in turn, combine in certain equation in a certain principle. There are certain principles for the combination of these 108 elements, giving rise to, 8.4 million chemicals, as mentioned in the Rasendra Sara Sangraha. So this is all taught in chemistry, in Rasayana Shastra, in the Vedantic text. So what our rishis did was, because understanding just look at a simple equation, applying permutations and combinations. 8.4 million chemicals present in the human body. But the scientific, modern science knows only 7 million chemicals. We are yet to identify those 1.4 million chemicals. So our rishis were much more advanced. They mentioned all this. There's a book I'm just mentioning, Rasendra Sarasangra. Read this book. It's a clear-cut mentioning of all the 8.4 million chemicals present in the body. And now, take a small situation. If in a chemical reaction, because the body is essentially a factory of biochemical reactions. If you take a simple situation wherein two chemicals react to form, say, two products. Okay? So the number of chemical reactions possible in the body are 1 by 2 into 8.4 million into 8.4 million minus 1. One position we already took. So it's about 864 by 2. So approximately 32 trillion chemical reactions possible. You count 1, 2, 3, 4 until 32 trillion. It'll take at least 7 years for that. So understanding all this, 32 trillion reactions is impossible. So what are rishis, they already went through, because they lived for tens of thousands of years. I'm not joking, they lived it. And I can prove, I can demonstrate how they could have lived. I can show, I did this in animal models, how people could have lived for as long as they wanted. And what they did was, because it is so difficult for, people in Kali Yuga especially, where our lifespan is not more than 100. Around, on an average it's 100. If you reach 100, it's great actually. So what they did was, they classified all these chemicals into 3 groups. Vata, Pitta and Kapha chemicals. So Vata Pitta Kapha is not just an electrophysiological classification. It is also a cytokine classification. The cytokines, for example, in Vata, the cytokines are chemical messengers present in the body. And in the Vata, essentially, the interleukin 4 is one of the prominent chemical messenger that we already identified. That translates the Vata information into interleukin 4, and then it leads to a series of chemical reactions. In the Pitta, the interleukin 10, interleukin 12 are important chemical messengers. In the Kapha, interleukin 8 is an important chemical messenger. We are doing a lot of tests to, you know, identify other chemical markers as well. So Vata, Pitta, Kapha, they are like, these agents actually define not just the electrophysiological mechanism, but also the physiological mechanisms, the immunological mechanisms, the chemical messaging, the chemical signal processing mechanisms are also classified. So, understanding modern science has given me, so for example, if I say, identify, okay, there's another thing, the Nadi Pariksha is beautifully explained in Ayurveda. In the Nadi, to cut the whole story short, you know, with the Nadi Pariksha, you know, you apply three fingers, you know, on the radial artery, and then applying various pressures, you look at the pulse parameters at seven different levels. The deepest level is the highest pressure, is when you apply the highest pressure to obliterate the pulse. That's the seventh level. And then you record the pulse parameters at each and every level, till the superficial level. Superficial is when you just touch the artery and then you're able to feel. That's the superficial level. So, at seven different levels and three different points, there are 21, you know, points on each of these. And 21 points project to each of the organs present inside. That's how our earlier scientists used to diagnose things. That's how even I diagnose, you know. There was an interesting incident that recently happened because most of the patients come with a lot of data. I said, these are the reports. I said, please don't show me the reports. Wait for a moment. I want to check the pulse. I checked the pulse. I explained the situation to one of the, he's a well-read chemical scientist. He's a doctorate. He's worked for a top level in the government of India, in the health ministry. He just appeared in my clinic last week. I said, Doctor Saab, please look at my data. I said, okay, if you're worried about this, okay, let me do something. I just checked this first. You look at the data. I'll tell you the numbers actually there. When I told him, you know, his blood bilirubin level, direct bilirubin, indirect bilirubin, it's not a joke. You know, it can be done. It is possible. The only thing is you need to process all the 7 million chemicals through your mind. You need to understand where, for example, if the immune system has more vata, in a certain point, you can get information of the immune system. If the immune system has more vata, then it could lead to type 1 hypersensitivity reactions. Then I know what kind of chemicals are present in the body. And depending on the liver's activity, you'll be able to arrive at all these parameters. So I'm working on a tool right now. By God's grace, if that tool comes up, this will actually literally be a non-invasive method of coming up with all the 3,000 blood parameters. All the blood cell count that you usually do expensive tests to arrive at. And all the genetic tests as well.
You'd bring the labs to your clothes.
Absolutely, yeah. That's what I want to do.
It's a lab on a chip.
Sorry.
It's a lab on a mind. It's a lab on a mind instead of a lab on a chip.
Yeah, that's what. Coming with a tool. You can validate the tool. That's what I'm saying.
So it actually becomes, it's not just subjective. It is not like only one person
who knows
the Nadi Shastra can diagnose you. It's a device. It becomes very scientific.
I'm building those algorithms. There's a prototype is already developed, but I'm working on an advanced machine right now. So until the advanced machine is, US FDA approved or, you know, I come up with some international standard, I don't want to talk about it. But then we are working on it, and it's possible. That's what I said. To answer your question, so our rishis classified all these chemicals into three broad groups. So I'll give you a small example. Look at potassium cyanide. You don't even know the taste before you die, right? But the same cyanide molecule, it's because of the cyanide, Cn- molecule. Same cyanide molecule, when it is impregnated, when it is bonded by a hydrogen bonding with a cobalt ion.
Dicobalt hydridate.
Yeah. I'm talking about a different chemical. I'll come to that. This cobalt is impregnated into the center of a porphyrin ring, and at the position C5 you have a ribose molecule. the same molecule becomes cyanocobalamin.
Okay. See.
Cyanide is fatal. But cyanocobalamin, without cyanocobalamin, your life is fatal again. Cyanocobalamin is a vitamin B12.
Vitamin B12.
So what our rishis did was, so what we are talking about, the balance of vata, pitta, kapha, is like literally in this molecule you will be able to say, the cyanide is a vata molecule, I can deduce that it is a vata molecule based on the properties as explained in the Charaka Samhita. The ribose is a kapha molecule, the porphyrin ring is a pitta molecule. So when you have, in a molecular structure, you have vata, pitta, kapha in equal proportions, then that molecule becomes a healthy molecule. And if you have isolated vata in the form of cyanide, it becomes fatal.
Life is a balance.
Yeah, exactly. Life is a balance. So this balance, when you achieve at a vata, pitta, kapha level, I mean, it translates into even chemical level as well. So understanding vata, pitta, kapha properly, understanding this, the transformations of panchamahabhutas, you know, you'll be able to, you know, arrive at all the physical, chemical sciences, you know, all the sciences that, I mean, for me, it became very easy to understand. So that's why I'm attempting to arrive.
These aspects of the human body, the vata, pitta and kapha, I think many people understand that how diet influences these humors.
Sure.
Did you get some understanding of how our emotions, like how they in turn influence?
Oh, yeah, sure, definitely. Yeah. See, our emotions. So, for example, vata. Hmm. Vata is at a mental level. It causes. Okay. For understanding that, I'll have to explain the effect of vata pitta kapha on an electrophysiological level. The vata actually, electrophysiologically, is a hyperreactive environment. I touch my body, I touch you. What happens is the local receptors translate this external stimulus in the form of touch into a chemical, into electrical information. That's called as an action potential. And the action potential has a resting membrane potential is when the cells are at rest, when they are not afflicted by any external stimulus, when they are not stimulated by any external environmental factor. That's called as a resting membrane potential. And when you touch it, the sodium ions open up, sodium channels open up, and the sodium ions go from extracellular fluid into the intracellular fluid. So that's how the change in electrical current happens. So the resting membrane potential slowly, these are the slow sodium channel ions, slow sodium channels. They allow the movement of sodium ion slowly. So the electric potential slowly goes up unto a certain threshold, which is called a threshold membrane potential. And at the threshold, the fast sodium channels open up, and then the action potential quickly, you know, manifests in a specific pattern. So what I found when I created models of vata, pitta, kapha, by applying diets, I gave vata enhancing diets to rats, pitta enhancing diet to create a pitta model, and kapha enhancing diets to create a kapha model. We created three, and then we compared for us to have a control. We had a group of rats that were fed on control diet, which was a balanced diet, essentially. What happened in the vata environment, vata group of rats, what happened was, the resting membrane potential got stabilized to a level which is very close to the threshold membrane potential. So the difference between the RMP and the threshold membrane was only 7 millivolts. But in pitta, it was 25 millivolts. The resting membrane potential was far away. I mean, it was pretty much equal, I mean, same as the one that was in the control group of rats. The control group of rats also had a similar change, similar difference between the RMP and the threshold membrane potential. The kapha had a larger difference between the resting and the threshold. They had 50 millivolts. So the vata becomes a hyperreactive electrophysiologically, and I mean, a biological environment which is hyperreactive electrophysiologically. The kapha becomes a hyporeactive. The pitta is a normally reactive or a spontaneously reactive. That's what I mentioned in my initial study. So translating this to the mental level, the vata causes, what does this mean? If you have a small difference between the resting membrane potential and the threshold membrane potential. If say, for example, across these grooves, you give a 50 millivolts of external stimulus. If you give a 50 millivolts, say for example, the vata cells produce 7 action potentials because the difference is only 7 millivolts. So 50 divided by 7 is about 49. So these cells would elicit 7 action potentials. The pitta cells would elicit 2 action potentials only. The kapha cells only 1. Which means the vata cells, you apply the same thing to the mind, the vata mind thinks too much. It's very
agitated.
Yeah, very agitated. That's number one. So if someone does things too fast, you understand that that is a vata person. Without even knowing him, you can explain the characteristics. What are the chemical reactions happening, you can explain. The kapha guy, you know, slowly moves actually. So kapha causes emotions like greed. Greed, because it tries to, because until you get the 50th threshold, you won't do anything, right? So until then you keep on accumulating. So kapha environment, electrophysiological environment in the mind causes greed. Pitta causes, if they are in excess, if kapha is in balance, then that person becomes very compassionate.
Right.
Pitta in balance causes swift and logical actions. But when it goes beyond a certain control, when it is vitiated and when it is in imbalance, then that causes emotions like jealousy, anger. So various, all these six emotions that we say are Arishad Vargas are essentially, classified under Vata, Pitta and Kapha. Essentially, so the mind also definitely has its own aspects, its own influences of excesses of any of these doshas, essentially.
Yeah, because Swami used to always emphasize that for any yogi, anybody who is on the spiritual path, one of the things he definitely has to look at is his food. That is like one of the senses that, that he imbibes. And of course, what he sees through his eyes, what he hears, all these things are so very important.
Sure,
so that
definitely.
I think we can understand that with the influence it has on these three.
Through this.
Elements.
This is the medium.
Right.
This is the medium. Just like Swami has in the spiritual environment, Swami created a bhajan as a medium to get moksha. At a physical body level, physical, mental and the sthula sukshma karana sharira level, what I see is the vata pitta kapha is the medium. Everything gets translated into that information. The food that you eat becomes, the food that you eat gets resolved into vata pitta kapha in the body, and the vata pitta kapha guide different chemical reactions in the body leading to various processes.
Right. So one interesting thing that came to my mind, I had read a book by a devotee of Swami. Her name is Joy Thomas, and she did some, through her experiences, nothing scientific, but she was able to correlate how many of her deep-seated mental blocks or attitudes, feelings, emotions, how they would lead to so many disease conditions in our body.
Yeah, sure.
And I particularly recall her saying that she could trace how her attitude of resisting authority led to rheumatism or arthritis rather in her knee. She was immediately able to see the
connection. She was able to correlate
connection.
That, okay.
Yeah, I think that's a very wide field that it needs to be
definitely further scientific evaluation and then validation definitely.
Yeah.
I do agree. I do believe that could happen.
But is this something that you have noticed? That when you treat the patients, are you able to correlate any such, a mental attitude or a block that they have to any disease condition? Is that something you've come across?
I really don't that, but I totally believe that is possible. But I didn't do my analysis in that way.
Okay.
For me, I just look at the pulse and then look at what all the imbalance. For example, if the brain has vata, vata, translates into hyperreactivity, right?
Yeah.
I see which part of the brain has vata and accordingly counsel the patient. That's all I do. And then give them some simple breathing techniques or, changes in the food.
Yeah.
Because overcoming mental blocks is really difficult.
Mm.
Very difficult. This is what our yogis continuously do in Himalayas. Right? So, I usually don't burden my patients with that. They're already burdened with so many other things.
Right.
So I give them simple techniques. I ask them, say, for example, one of my patients was very fond of alcohol. I shouldn't be talking about alcohol, but then scientifically,
As an example.
Very fond of alcohol, But I told him, see, you should not have dry wine. But then he's fond of dry wine again.
Mm.
Mental predisposition leads to that. I fly to Bangkok. He landed in Bangkok. And said, Ravi, I have a severe... these guys are very, very rich guys. I need to immediately fly my private jet back into Bangkok. He said, you tell me before I arrived, I don't want you to die. You're too rich a person. I thought, what did you do? I asked him, what are the symptoms? He said, I have pain. I knew his pulse parameter. So I asked him, what are the symptoms? He said he had some severe pain in the back, low back. I then immediately asked, did you have white, dry wine? I said, yes. Only a crate, 24 bottles. These are very healthy drinkers, by the way. They did an entire PhD on that. So, you know what? I said, where are you? I asked. He said, I'm in the duty free. He said, okay, go buy Blue Label. And then drink half of it, half liter of that. He said, what? I said, yes, you do that. He did that. He said, no, Ravi, pain is gone. I said, no, that's not. Now go buy Black Label. Because I know these guys, threshold actually. They have 1,000 times activity of the alcoholic dehydrogenase. So I knew that one. So I took a chance. I asked, you buy Black Label whiskey and the half liter. And then he drank it. And then Ravi, he said, the stones are coming. And I have the stones in my hands. I said, that's good.
Oh, okay.
See, everything is balanced. The moment you understand this balance. No, this is a chemical reaction. Essentially, I see this as a chemical reaction, essentially. When you arrive at that chemical reaction, the balancing, the body, when you arrive at this balance of Vata Pitta Kapha, the body expels all the toxins that are not required. It expels them as in the form of, as toxins, and the body restores total health. The physical, the human body, when I refer it, is both the physical, mental, and the causal body.
And that is how you've been able to actually find cures for so many seemingly incurable diseases.
Yes, by Swami's grace. Yes, definitely.
That's what can you?
Yeah, but I was the first in the world to prove that the heart muscle, as we know, after an MI is a myocardial infarction, it leads to the formation of a scar tissue, and we know that heart is a pump essentially, right? Physiologically, we see it as a pump. So the moment a part of the heart dies because of some infarction, then that part is replaced by a scar tissue. The pump function reduces by that much. And scientifically, no one, before 2009, no one even was ready to believe that, heart muscle could regenerate. Mm-hmm. But I always wanted to show something which people think is impossible should be made possible by, creating models. Because Swami is one of the interesting things that, this I applied. Swami once said, we had a patient, in whom, and he was discussing about that patient on the veranda. And Swami said, hey, what do you want to do in that patient? Everyone unanimously said, we're going to do a bypass. And, you guys, you always want to, put your scalpel on the chest. You want to cut because you have scalpels. This is not how I created this universe, Swami said. He went into immediately that impersonate, absolute truth form, truth level of consciousness, not beyond consciousness. He mentions, no, this is not how I created the universe. I create, wherever there is a problem, there will be a solution right next to that. And then an interesting thing happened. We found some anomalous artery in this patient right the next day, and then they did a CABG. We didn't have to do an entire bypass. We had to just, the arteries were right available, but that's kind of a miracle, we thought. But then I said, there should be some physiological mechanism by which that miracle must be happening in the physical plane, right? So that's when I realized, studying stem cell research. I was appointed as a stem cell researcher in my institution, the Bakulev Center. So we did some stem cell research there and understood that, interestingly, all the stem cells are present everywhere in the body. This is something very, very fantastic because we think that the stem cells are just present, in some parts, and then they, you need to induce them, we inject them. You don't have to.
In fact, in that cardiac conference, I remember Swami said that few can realize the limitless potentialities of each cell in the human body. It is one of the greatest secrets of creation.
That's exactly, when you said that, I want to tell this actually. And you again, raised that. And what Swami said, applying this, when I did this research, when I did some literature review, I realized that the stem cells are present everywhere. Then why the stem cells are not getting proliferated? Why aren't they then repairing the tissue was the next question. You know what? I found an answer for the Aryan invasion theory also from this. I'll tell you how. See, Arya. Who is an Aryan? Because I need to tell this to come back to an interesting discovery here. Aryas, people think Aryans invaded India and gave us the culture. I don't believe in any of this trash. No, this is not right. Because we know India, the Bharata Desha, which has the Saptasindhus, Gange Chimune Cheva, Godavari, Saraswati, Narmadi, Sindhu, Kaveri is the place, I mean, wherever these seven Sindhus are present, and where Himalayas and the north, from Burma to the then Iraq, and from the north to Kashmir, Kanyakumari at the south, is the place which is called as the Aryavarta, that we know. And there's a misconception that Aryans invaded India and they gave us the culture. It's all wrong, you know, because, you know, Sapta Sindhu, Rigveda was written on the banks of the river Saraswati, and Saraswati is just dried up now. Mm. It's presently, you know, in the Pakistan area. So, why is there a confusion? It's so simple. Arya just means, according to the Panini grammar, Arya means a noble person. Mm-hmm. If you decode that, ya Arihi Nayate Iti Aryaha. That Arya is the one, is Ya, that one, who Nayate, who rules his enemies. Mm. Or mm. who destroys his enemies. Ari, in Sanskrit, it means enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And who are the enemies? And people think, oh yes, we were the enemies who had been fighting. The Russians think they are Aryans. The Germans think they are Aryans. But none of them are Aryans, I'm sorry. No, because I have a different, I read the entire Rig Veda to decode this, and then arrived at this interesting thing that, who are Aryas? Then what are the enemies? And who are the enemies? Ari Shadvargaha. Very simple. These are six enemies that are present in the body, that are present in every individual, and you have to win over these enemies first. Mm-hmm. So that's why if you look at any, I mean, these are the Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Madha, Matsarya. These are the six areas. That's why Arihi Shadvargaha. No, we don't understand that. Like if you apply Sanskrit, then it's very easy to understand. Shadvargaha. Six classes of enemies are there, it seems. Kamaha. Anything in excess is kamaha. It's not just passions. Anything in excess is kama. Krodha. Anger. Jealousy. Greed. Pride. Excessive pride. And envy. These are the six enemies. So, Arya is a person who wins over these six enemies. Then only he'll be able to win over the whole world. You know, Swami also, you remember the 21st December 1970 speech in Rajahmundry, Swami clearly mentions, Russia is like the mighty Bhima, it seems.
Yeah.
America is like the mighty Arjuna. But then India is the Dharmaraja.
Yes.
And when India comes, arrives at its right position of the Dharmaraja, then Russia and America will fall at India's feet. That's what Swami said. When will they fall? When we become truly Aryans, I mean, who are Aryans? When we win over these enemies. So when I try to decode this, I arrived at an answer for Swami's questions, Swami's suggestion, and also for the stem cell research. How? What happens in the body is, when you are bound or afflicted by any of these six enemies, what happens is that toxins are created in the body. Because these are the ones, they are the enemies, true. Why? They are the enemies that bind these stem cells from proliferating or getting recruited at the site of the tissue injury.
Mm-hmm.
So, what we do in Ayurveda, there's an interesting shodhana procedure, a cleansing procedure, detoxification process, which is called as a panchakarma. Mm-hmm. By panchakarma, you eliminate toxins, that's what they say. So, you eliminate toxins, and everyone's, you know, gains at least 2 years, 3 years, you know, they feel rejuvenated really. Why? Because you're freeing the body from these toxins, so the stem cells which are bound because of these toxins get freed. The stem cells don't die. The stem cells are literally omnipotent. So the Swami cells in action. Mm-hmm. They're omnipotent. They're like, they're pluripotent in the scientific way. You know, totipotent. So, they get recruited to any site of tissue injury, any site where the tissue injury occurs, and they proliferate. They regenerate the body. And this I replicated in an animal model of MI. I created models of MI in animals. And when I tried to, you know, free the body from these, you know, Arishadvargas, and made them, the rats, the true Aryans, they freed themselves from the toxins. The cells, the stem cells got recruited there, proliferated, they regenerated the heart tissue. The first of its kind in the world, and I'm getting a patent very soon on this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So this is how Swami's one sentence led to a major discovery, major breakthrough, and then, you know, India, like, would give a solution. Indian Vedic system, Ayurvedic system would give a solutions for the world's number one problem, which is the atherosclerosis or ischemic heart disease. Mm. And then by Swami's grace, we'll be able to, you know, give that from India. I think a total solution for the heart, a whole heart solution.
Do you see a timeline? Is there any timeline for which?
I already did a lot of human studies as well. And I'm trying to compile this data, present it to the USFDA, get their clearance. Because USFDA, all said and done, is like a very powerful and a standardized body across the world. You get a USFDA certification, you're like pretty much everywhere. So we're trying to arrive at that. Once we do that, in 18 months, October 2016 is the deadline for this. Okay. Once we arrive at that, then the only thing that I'll do is propagate Ayurveda, scientific Ayurveda. This is my, you know, because this is India's indigenous medical science and the world's true health science. True. Because everything else, you're just, you know, bandaging a gangrenous foot. How will that help, you know? You're making it look beautiful.
Curing the symptoms, not...
Yeah, it's exactly. You know, it's not even curing. You're masking. You're not seeing that, that's all. You're putting a bandage on a gangrenous foot. It won't help. Finished. That's what I mean. I'm totally convinced. I know my colleagues. I don't want to scare my colleagues, and I just want to give them a message also that everyone will have a role in this, that's for sure. I don't want to snatch away anything. But what I want is that applying Swami's principles in, you know, in the field of health, you know, you can really restore health of millions across the world.
And you can do it in a most cost-effective way.
Cost-effective way, in the most scientific way. In the most Vedantic scientific way.
Yeah. And I think, when Bhagwan used to always mention that India is the leader of nations, India will be the engine, and you know, as you mentioned, India will be the Dhammaraja, and India will very shortly attain that status of being the leader of the world. And I think these are the different ways probably it will happen.
Sure.
Only when we recognize the amazing heritage of India.
Sure.
And the phenomenal work done by the sages. You know, sages, as you very rightly mentioned, they are just scientists. Just that they did not build million dollar laboratories, but they just went inside and they found everything.
Sure.
And they did the most.
No, they did scientific tests as well. They validated that as well in the Bhautika. Because if you look at Viveka Chudamani, Jagadguru Adi Shankaracharya mentions that you need three evidences, it seems. Shabda Pramana, Anumana Pramana, and Anubhava Pramana. So these are what? Direct evidence, indirect evidence, and logical conclusion. There's even today only three evidences are there. The scientific evidence are only three. We already mentioned, and Arishas already mentioned, they had beautiful, I mean, I personally believe that we had amazing labs, but all cost effective, all biodegradable. So that's why we eat in a banana leaf, you know. Why? Yes. Because that balances Vata Pitta Kapha.
Oh, wow.
Number one, the food starts getting processed on the plate itself. And then when you eat with your hands, you know, there's a Norwegian scientist, I just forget his name right now. He's got a Nobel Prize. You know for what? For showing the world, proving to the world that eating with hands is good actually for your health. He got a Nobel Prize for that.
Absolutely. In fact, this is something that, you know, we really want to have a session with you just on these practices of Indian culture, you know, practices handed down to us by our saints and sages, which sometimes the modern generation is unable to accept. You know, you question the modern generation. A youngster will say that, no, why should I eat with hand? Actually, the modern lifestyle says that, you know, you should not touch the food, you'll get infected and things like that. You know, you want to eat with spoons or you want to eat with gloves and all that.
Right.
So we have really lost, and a current parent perhaps has no answer to when a child says that, you know, they say that you'll get infected, so why should I eat with hand? And you don't have answers to such questions, and that is the reason why probably we are missing out on this.
Yeah, one thing that will help
knowledge.
You know, people rethink about this is, see, when I did the research on cow-based products, so I was reading, the Westerners mentioned that there'll be a lot of nematode infections in the cow dung, so it's not good to touch with hands and things like that. The question came to me was, oh, on what cows did they test? They tested on Jersey cows, Holstein cows, Stockholm cows, all the Western cows. They didn't test on the Indian cows. Because in India, you know, cow dung is considered very sacred.
Sacred.
You know why? It has got more than 500 antiseptics that we realized after doing a lot of tests. It has got more than 500 antiseptics. It has got more than 20 growth factors. It has got more than 170 interesting chemical messengers.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's a factory of, you know, all useful chemicals for the body. And interestingly, you know what, atomic spectroscopy revealed, you know what, 5 milligrams of gold ions in 1 liter of cow dung, in 1 kilo of cow dung, 5 milligrams. I always tell my students, I say, see, look at the beauty of the cows, you know, it eats grass and gives gold. And humans eat gold and give grass. So what our rishis did was, because they translated all the Vedic knowledge into local cultures.
Absolutely.
So this culture is very important. Very important. They translated all the scientific knowledge into culture. So the moment you follow our culture, you live with long health.
Yes.
You live with in unison with the nature and you attain God. That's why Acharad Ayuhu is what is said by Jagatguru Adi Shankara. And Vivekananda, Swami Vivekananda, he mentions, he's a, when someone in the UK asks, no, you come from a dirty country. I say, yes, I do come from a dirty country. But then, this is the final destination of every soul on this universe. And from here, 90% of the souls reach God. So that is the result of this dirty country, he says. So, you know.
Amazing. So, I know you can go on Dr. Ravi Shankar. And we have not even scratched this surface of what you can share with us. But I think the we have opened up so many strands, and perhaps, you know, whenever Swami wills and you are here in Puttaparthi again, we'll probably have a few more sessions, and especially these sessions on the practices of our culture. I think that will really help the current generation to appreciate them and live them and sort of be so sure about them and not be so shy about them. And I think that'll really help in reviving this beautiful heritage that is given to God through the sages and saints. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Jai Sairam.
And thank you so much, Hari Shankar and Jai Ganesh, for being with us. So dear listeners, the time is running out. It's already 9:50 and I have to draw the curtains on this last segment of Thursday Life, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai. Even as I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama on motherhood presented by Balvika's children from Bihar and Jharkhand. It's presented in the Sai Kulanth Hall in Divine Presence on 5th October 2010. So continue, keep listening, and do tell us what you felt about today's conversation with Dr. Ravi Shankar. And as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. And by Swami's grace, let's hope that we can continue this discussion. And perhaps you got some of the messages. Probably you may not have got everything that he said, but I think there's something that would have triggered something in you. At least something about Ayurveda, something about Indian culture, something about Bhagwan's message on how, if you maintain a good health, it'll automatically lead us to our spiritual progress. A sound body will lead us to a sound mind, and vice versa, and so on. So there's so much to discuss. So please do feel free to even share your questions if you have any suggestions. Maybe next time we will take up a discussion based on what you would like us to know and take it from there. So thank you so much for being with us. So with prayers to Bhagwan and expressing our deep sense of gratitude to him for having given us this opportunity to think about him, to dwell on his message, and this opportunity to share his message, I take leave on this beautiful Thursday night. Keep listening, keep thinking about him, keep ruminating on his message, and live in his love. Thank you so much. Good night. Sairam.